Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello. This week, I'm talking to scientist, journalist, and activist, Dr. Alfredo Carpanetti. He's going to talk to us about being an out and proud scientist, finding your tribe, and what really goes on at scientific conferences.
To be honest, I would say that I downloaded Grindr when I went for my first conference in Glasgow, and it was a revelation.
You're listening to Probably True. Please be aware that this podcast may contain strong language and adult themes. It would be boring without them.
All right. So based on some of the last guests, I sort of want to talk about community, about how we look and found communities, but also about the masks that we have on and that we keep having even once we found a community. So, I'm a scientist and I am a gay man. When I was doing my PhD, I knew a few gay people. There were, to be honest, I was at Imperial College London, which is a scientific university, and I was always involved with the queer society there. I was president 1 year as well. So I knew that there were queer people in science. I never knew there were queer people in science that were older than me, that were senior people, that they've been there.
So it was all just hot young scientist twinks at your university?
Well, it was like undergrads and our PhD students, but I'm not going to either deny or confirm that.
Sorry, carry on.
No, it's absolutely fine. It's a fair comment. And like I knew by the end of my PhD, I knew of one person who I followed on Twitter and liked pretty much everything he posted because it was a gay professor of astronomy. And when I met him randomly at an event in Parliament, where I was just doing a presentation for the Science Technology Council, I was just sort of build myself up that I was going to just go and introduce myself and be charming and everything. And Peter just replied with like, yes, I know who you are. You like every single thing that I post.
Wow.
Which was devastating in the moment. But then I thought, huh, you noticed me.
Okay.
And it's fine.
Slight edging into stalker territory here, but let's carry on, see
no,
where this
we're
goes.
Friends, we're friends now, but no, this is not the story.
Does he know that you're friends now?
Yes. We've
okay.
Mean. Yes. It's all about making an impression. Anyway, the story. So, what I want to talk about is the LGBT seminar. So, this is the largest meeting of LGBTQ plus scientists and engineers in the world and happens in the UK. And it was started by Dr. Beth Helen in summer 2014, randomly on Twitter. And when it started, actually, she just wanted a seminar in which she was just other queer people and then we can all go to the pub. It was an excuse to actually meet up. And I was among the first conversation I kept seeing this popping up on Twitter. And it was very nice seeing this sort of starting it. And she was like, oh, would people like to come and give a talk about their work? And I went pretty much, I'll do it, but only for the attention. So when it actually happened in January 2016, it was an incredible event. There were 80 people attending. I met so many other queer people that were doing brilliant science. They were phenomenal engineers. And that was great. I never experienced something like that. Over the course of the following year, I sort of stumbled into what is now my second job, which is not paid. I run Pride in STEM, which is a charitable trust working on supporting and showcasing LGBTQ plus people in STEM.
Just before you go on, STEM. What's STEM?
STEM, good point. STEM is science, technology, engineering, and maths.
Oh, cool. All right. All the brainy people subjects. I've got an arts degree. It's all the brainy stuff for me.
Should I describe all the arts people as all the talented bunch stuff?
No, we're all the arsy-farsy floaty ones. You know, we just colour in and do interpretive dance.
Well, to be honest, geologists also do a lot of colouring in.
Yeah, but that's not real science. That's just messing around in the muck.
And, I don't know, licking rocks.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of that pseudoscience.
Yes. Yeah, my geologist friend will make me pay for that. So, and again, it's something that I stumbled on with a few friends. We just wanted to march at London Pride. And to march at London Pride back then, you needed to have a website and a sort of ethos and obviously a name and everything. So we wanted a walking group that it was queer scientists. So what can we do? And we started it. And within a few days of having that online, people start getting in touch for advice, which I was just like, I have literally no expertise on this. I just want to march along the Pride. I don't know. It's very complicated for me to suddenly be... It felt very much above my pay grade because I just wanted to be with my friends along the Pride and I had no... Why should anyone listen to me since it's like I don't have the right advice? Didn't want to give advice when I was just guessing. So over the course of the few months between the application and Pride, we actually started getting together like resources that we could get from Stonewall, from other organizations worldwide, and giving advice and everything. And at that point, I sort of felt that there was something that we can do more. And a few people suggested, oh, we should turn this into a charitable trust so people can give you money, which people don't, but we are a charitable trust. We're very poor, like... There are stories about people trying to get us defunded, mostly TERFs, which, if you don't know, they're trans-exclusionary radical feminists.
So they call themselves feminists, but they...
Oh, yes. You can't see it because this is an audio medium, but I'm doing a lot of quotation marks.
Yeah, so they're the ones who call themselves feminists and say that trans women aren't women, essentially. That's their argument, because they haven't grown up as women or something.
Yeah, it's complete nonsense. They claim absurd things like there are only two sexes in humanity, which we know is not the case. That there are only two genders, which we definitely know it's not the case because there are people with lived experience, but it's complete nonsense. But obviously, we support the entire LGBTQ plus community, so we got on their wrong side, and they thought that all these big labs that sort of like our stuff or retweet our stuff were like giving us money, and which was hilarious that. I was just like seeing them like, oh, yes, let's email all these people and tell them to stop giving them money. And I was just like, okay, maybe they'll realize that they're not giving us money and they want to give us money. You know what? There's no such thing as bad publicity. Then they went on for about 2 weeks of hate comments. But you know what? I sincerely don't give a fuck, and better that they bother me than they target... vulnerable trans and non-binary person. So, back to the story, because I tend to digress a lot. So, at the time, I just felt that it would make sense if we sort of formalize a little bit more the group. And we went back to the second LGBT seminar. And that is, I think, the fulcrum of the story. While I enjoyed the first one very much, I presented it, and I knew a lot of people that presented. There were a lot of PhD students that I heard of or that I was friends with, so it was great to see them like in front of us with being so talented and being so wonderful, telling us about their science, their work. It was great. When the second one came around, and it was a lot more popular, a lot busier in a bigger venue and with a lot of people that I didn't know, I started noticing something. From the most accessible talk to the most complex talk, and we had some that were, you have to struggle, it was absolutely wonderful to see that everyone was relaxed. And we didn't experience that the first year. At least I had people saying, oh, say to me that I looked very relaxed and I was very like upfront about everything, but it comes easier for me being very upfront about being queer in science during my PhD. It's very difficult because for most people, it's not very visible being queer. So the way I designed it in my talks is that I make mentions. Since I'm lucky that my husband is a phenomenal video editor and animator. And
he's cute too.
I know. I'm very blessed. Hashtag blessed. I always mention that the animation in my talks are done by my husband. Aww. At the time. Yeah. But it's also a good thing to just say, ha, you see?
I suppose that makes sense because in science and stuff, the science doesn't care who's doing it, essentially. Like the results aren't going to change because,
yeah,
because you've got a husband rather than a wife. Or
exactly.
No one at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people say that I felt more relaxed and everything. And I didn't feel it. I felt that I wanted to be very good and impress people and everything. But when I was in the audience, when I was witnessing all these amazing people, I just realized something that in a place that all these people knew that they were surrounded by supportive queer people, the thing that was missing, it was this sort of mask that we put on for the benefit of the straight world. And even the people that were the most nervous about telling us about their science, because maybe they were a junior researcher, they were early PhD students, after a while, they were just so relaxed. And that has been getting better year after year. So much that I was asked to do some consultation for the last one, in which I, as a science communicator, had to prep the speakers. And so it was good fun. But a lot of the speaker actually wanted that. But seeing them speak the day after, so this was Thursday, and the seminar is the second Friday of January. Seeing them speak, I was just like, why did they want me there? They didn't need me. They were all so brilliant. And again, the thing that I kept telling them was to just relax because there is an environment that will be interested, welcoming. Even the most complicated talks, there were people in that field that were fascinated and interested and asking questions. And I never experienced anything like it in any other scientific conference, even in places in which it was just about a very specific field and subset. And I feel that although there's clearly such a huge issue for our community of how out we are, how out we present ourselves. Because personally, in certain environments, I want to be gay enough that fellow queer can tell that I'm gay. But at the same time, I don't want to have people that can threaten me find out. So we are tightrope walkers trying to balance how much we're out. But I think there is this kind of mask, especially in the scientific worlds, can be seen in every single underrepresented group. We're all trying to aspire to be this ideal that, I don't know, it probably would look like an old, white, straight male.
That's how you do science. You have to be old and white and straight and male.
But seeing the seminar happening, and now in January it's going to be the fifth edition, it really showed that when you build a community and you create an environment that is supportive, an environment that is non-judgmental, you really can create something which people can thrive. And just to think, from when Beth started it, it has grown so much and it's worldwide. If you're just curious about it, you can Google or search on Twitter the hashtag LGBTSTEM or LGBTQSTEM. You see how many hundreds, if not thousands of people are involved in this. And I just find it so wonderfully heartwarming that for as many ills have social media brought into the world, that there is something wonderful that can happen, and it can create and can foster, and it can make communities such as this grow.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So would you say before you started this, when you get together with other astrophysicists, because that's your discipline is astrophysics. So if, when you get together with other astrophysicists who maybe you know, or maybe you know of their work, but you don't know them well, do you feel slightly uncomfortable in that situation, in that you don't know them well enough to know whether you can be out at them?
Well, I made the very conscious decision that I would never, ever go back into the closet. But it comes with the privilege that I have. I have a very supportive family. I have a good job. I can afford to be as out as I possibly can without fearing any threat to my livelihood and to what I care about. So there's never been a conference in which I felt that, I cannot be out here. In every conferences, apart from one I attended that was in China, I seek to see if there were organized LGBTQ plus events or something similar. Or back in the days, going on Grindr. Like, I'm at the conference.
It's a networking app, apparently.
To be honest, I would say that I downloaded Grindr when I went for my first conference in Glasgow. And it was a revelation because I was very good at the conference and not for any other reason. Networking.
Of course. Yeah, you were just using it entirely for networking.
Yes. I'm in town for a conference.
Let's have a drink. We can talk about the stars.
Yes. That's how I fool all of them.
Excellent. I love it.
I would say, though, that there is a lot of posturing. I would definitely be a lot more defensive of my work. The way you are pretty much taught to discuss science is you're there to tell everyone in the audience that you're right, and if they disagree, they're wrong. But it's an issue because science is wishy-washy. We have a way to explain the whole universe that is very limited, and yet it's one of the most precious things that we have, and it's incredible. We are supposed to be apes scavenging in the savannah, and we can understand the universe. We can create masterpieces of music. It's incredible what we can do, but the way we interpret the world, the way we talk about the world, that is limited and wishy-washy. And I feel that simply because our ancient, not really evolved brain needs to be told this is correct to believe it. So it's bad, very bad, and makes for a lot of mask for a lot of facades in science.
So as a consequence of your decision to be out and always out, have you noticed any changes in the way people interact with you, or the way they treat you as a result of that, or possibly as a result of that?
Never had any major, never had anything to my face, at least, I'm not an active scientist anymore, so maybe that had something to do with it, or I don't know, it's that I cannot know. But I feel that the people in my former group that I'm still in contact with, they all seem to be still lovely, still very respectful. And so I don't think that my decision has truly impacted me negatively. I think if it did, I don't know. And everything that I have experienced since has been, for me, very positive. As I said, I found a niche in the bigger LGBTQ community, and I'm so very fortunate to have found it.
Have you had any stories from people that have come to you as part of STEM and said, oh my God, I'm so glad you're here. I felt so alone and so kind of isolated and things like that.
Yeah, there are a lot. About 2 years ago, we started working on the International Day of LGBTQ People in STEM that we nickname hashtag LGBT STEM Day. And it was hugely popular with a lot of big organizations trying their weight. Not their money, but their weight, which is already enough.
It's a start.
Yeah, behind it. And pretty much every time we celebrated, so we've done it twice, we had people getting in touch, either to say thanks, a lot of people to give advice on how we can improve, which is so needed because it's just a bunch of us from all over the world, but we are all doing this in our spare time, and any feedback is so appreciated. But we also had people from countries where they cannot be out and said, oh, I wish I could be out, wish I could find a way. And I wish that we were like a multi-million dollar organization that I could just give them grants and bursary to find way out, but we just need to keep working hard and believe that we can change this terrible world, or hope for an asteroid to eat us. So
that's one way out, I suppose.
Yeah, it's nihilism, but with a twist of optimism.
I think the important thing, perhaps, is to do something.
Yeah.
Because when you started, you didn't set out to make it happen the way it has, or to have the kind of impact or following that it has. You just did the thing that was right in front of you, and it has led you here.
Yeah, it's very much, I'll do this. Hopefully it will be good. Hopefully I will make the world a little bit better. Maybe I can help a couple of people. And
make some friends.
Make some friends, yeah, along the way. And I don't know, it's been very much never thinking about the wider picture. Even with when we started LGBT STEM Day, the idea of, yes, international, but we were literally talking with a few other organizations from Australia, States, Germany, Britain, Ireland, and we're just like, can we do some events? And then we got some organization involved, so got to about 30 events, but it's not never, ooh, can next year go 60 nations? No, is can we maybe get 31? Or can we make those 30 bigger? Can they be more accessible? Can they have more intersectional speakers? Can we just get a little bit better? It's because it's difficult. It's a lot of hard work, and something that we get asked again and again is if we have like little jobs that people can maybe dedicate a little time, and we actually trying to work out a way to create something like that, because most of like the events or the thing we do requires months of plannings, but there are so many people that live very busy lives. They are PhD students that they are under a huge amount of stress, and they still get in touch and say, oh, can I volunteer with something small? I really want to do something. I really want to help the community. And it's wonderful to hear. It's wonderful that even people that are under so much pressure still want to give something back. Hopefully we'll find something for them to do.
Oh, that's really nice. And you're just doing it. You're doing what you can. That's lovely.
Yeah.
And it's making such a difference, which is awesome.
I'd like to think so.
Do you know if there have been any relationships kind of blossoming out of all of this? Have you brought some people together? Have you made some love? But that's not quite what I meant.
That is a very good question.
I mean, we all know what gays are like. Some of them are bound to have shagged.
It will be without that. Like, seriously, it's... And I would say, I don't think it's just the gays. Like, you have suddenly an increase of... 100, I think last year was 175 queer folks in a room for an entire day, and then we go out for drinks. So I could, I won't comment, I will not name names, but I'm sure that there is been hanky-panky going on.
Hanky and panky.
Again, drawing back from my experience at conferences, and maybe that is completely different because all the conferences I've been were like very serious straight conferences from the official societies. And I was always a slut.
I mean, why not?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, hi. Oh, yes.
Yes, I would like to touch it. Thank you very much.
You are in a new city. You get all the adrenaline by presenting something. It's good if you feel that you're... Your science session, rather than any other kind of session, is not going to be very well attended. You go and it's like, oh, I'm at the conference. Are you at the conference too? Oh, come and see me talk. Oh, we can catch up afterwards. So it's, you do what you have to do for interest and popularity. Every conference I have attended always been very good fun.
And I think that's understandable. It's a very stressful job being in STEM. And, you know, you need to have some time to pound it out every now and then and relax.
Yes, it's... I'm sure that there's been some... but I'm trying to be thinking about relationship that have blossomed. Nothing comes to mind. So I don't think I've done... Oh. Much cupiding.
Just yet.
I don't know if you are lonely heart and you are in STEM and you want me to introduce you to other lonely heart STEM people, get in touch.
Oh, that's nice. What advice would you give to someone who finds himself in a similar situation to you did, to where you're kind of lonely and lacking that community feel and that kind of thing?
What I'd say is that there is a community out there. I cannot think of an interest niche enough that you're not going to find queer people that share the same interest. And you might only talk to them online and never meet them in real life, but that doesn't make them any less real. And I think it's very important that everyone knows that there is this big community out there. And within this big community, there are subsets which are equally wonderful, equally brilliant, full of lovely people. At least I like to think so. As I said, optimist with a side of nihilism. And it's go find a community. Because every time I have... some youngling getting in touch and say, oh, how can I get involved? I'm just like, oh my God, just be there. Like, there have been people asking for, it's actually wonderful to see that we, over the last 5 years, there have been so much changes. And now there are people in their first year of PhD going like, oh, yes, this is great. I want to have all these changes happening at me at university. What do you think I should do first? Not even like, oh, what should I do? How can I help? No. They have a plan and they're ready to make it happen. And I'm just like, I'm in awe, absolutely awe. I'm just like, oh, again, I wish I had money to hire you because that's exactly what we need. And yes, go find people that you share interest with. And don't be shy. Never feel that, oh my God, those people are super cool and I'm not. I'm just, too dorky, they're never going to talk to me. Just go and get in the community, make your mark, even if it's little, even if it's just liking tweets or making every tweet, it matters. Everything matters.
Maybe don't like everything.
Well, I knew that was going to come back and haunt me. But we are still friends, so I think I won in the long run.
You wore him down. Well done. Do you have anything you want to plug?
I'm on Twitter as Dr. Carpiniti, C-A-R-P-I-N-E-T-I. I am on Instagram as Dr. Carpiniti. I'm very proud of that title because I work bloody hard for it. And the thing that I want to plug, because otherwise my husband is not going to be happy, is a podcast called The Astroholic Explains. And I have a blog called The Astroholic. And I do live broadcasts when I make cocktails and talk about science. And in the podcast, instead, we have Chris, my husband, who's not a scientist, asking me questions on the spot, which I've not had time to prepare. And I try my best to give him an answer that is understandable.
Cool. And I can recommend it. It's very good. In fact, if you're one of my Patreon subscribers, you've already seen me recommend it in the newsletter that I send out to people who subscribe. So, yeah, follow the Astroholic Explains on your favorite podcatcher and sign up to my Patreon so I can send you an email where I just dribble on about nothing for 5 minutes. It's great. It's definitely worth the dollar.
Yeah, it absolutely worth the money.
Oh, thank you very much.
That was Probably True, the repeatedly award-winning storytelling series created by me, Scott Flashheart, to remind all of my queer brothers and sisters that we are none of us alone. You can find transcripts of every episode, links, and other things at probablytruepodcast.com. There's additional content and other lovely stuff available to subscribers at patreon.com/probablytrue. And if you want to get in touch, just search Probably True Podcast on the socials.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.